Brother Lance, you need to silence that that noise.
Ashe. We'll pour to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it. Whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave, whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God, oh Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with the Dinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves, became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names.
Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffin.
Thomas Bentley Jr. Long.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collective. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study. Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Honorable Elijah Muhammad,
John Henry Clark,
Dr. Khalid Muhammad,
Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
Ashe. History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed, no more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. Away. Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't
change a world, just you and me.
Telling us, as I remember the Osagie for Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, that now, as you turn in your grave, if you had been alive, you'd possibly be 107 years today. But you are people, some of them, in their lack of wisdom, chose to remove you from power. I apologize on their behalf. They gave you only a few years to be present in this world. And during those few years that you are present in this world, you shook not only Ghana, but Africa so very fundamentally that although your mortal remains were interred, your spirit is alive and well. And it's that spirit that occupies our minds and hearts today as we remind ourselves that the only way in which Africa will realize our potential is through the path of unity. I know as you lie in your grave, great Osagyefo, there is a sense in which, in a manner so completely invisible to us, you are turning uncomfortably and weeping uncontrollably. Because your continent is bleeding. It is bleeding in every corner. In our heart, in the Congo, she bleeds. That country that is so rich is yet the poorest nation in Africa. But it does not stop bleeding only in the Congo. It also bleeds in our own, in Somalia. That country, which could be very rich, is only famous for the wrong things. Men killing men for no reason. But it doesn't stop bleeding there. It is also bleeding in our armpit, in Equatorial Guinea, that country that God gave so much oil, that oil was long captured by one family, and they are using it for their benefit to the detriment of their people. And it doesn't stop bleeding there. In Central African Republic, and in Libya, and in Mauritania, and in Mali, your continent is torn asunder. And we who have gathered here today are asking ourselves the fundamental question. What must we do to save Africa? And that is why today when we are...
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
And good evening, and thank you all for being with us this evening. I am your host, Brother Lance Jones, with our co-host, Ms. Boniswa, How are you this evening?
Greetings, Brother Lance. I am wonderful this evening. My name is Boniswa Ayan. For those who may struggle with pronouncing Boniswa, you can just call me Sister Ayan.
Great. And thank you for being with us to be a part of this. We are brand new to the station here, and we want to thank all of you for joining us. Tonight we are very excited, as we just heard from Mr. PLO Lumumba, who talked about how our continent is bleeding, all 12 million square miles of our continent, all five regions for hundreds of years. And so, but tonight we have a very special guest, and I'm excited to have them here with us. It's Africa's Brain Bank. And representing Africa's Brain Bank this evening is the CEO, we know her as Reverend Pam. Reverend Pam, how are you this evening?
I am blessed, Chief Jones and Sister Ayan. Very excited to be here, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Indeed, indeed. We're going to have a great conversation. Along with the CEO, we have the chairman, Dr. Kumba. How are you, sir?
I am doing wonderful, Mr. Jones. Thank you so much for inviting us to be part of the show tonight. Looking forward.
Yes, sir. We have a lot to talk about, and I want to jump right into it. If I may, Reverend Pam, you know, when you think about Africa's Brain Bank, give us an overview, number one, of what it is and how did it come about? Was it a dream? Was there an incident in your life that caused it to come into existence? Share that, if you would, please.
I would love to do so, Chief. Thank you so much. I am Reverend Pam Fomenu. And as Chief already introduced me, CEO of Africa's Brain Bank, but I'm also the visionary. Well, Chief says to talk about how it came about. I'll talk about how it came about before I actually say what it is. It was October the 2nd. I was just driving to my office, and the Lord laid it in my heart, among other things. At the time, I did not understand the magnitude of it. Africa's Brain Bank. I've never heard of anything like that before. So I just, you know, like I'll normally do, when he says something, I have to listen. But come to think of it, I understand why he did not show me the magnitude at that time. Because like the children of Israel, God did not tell them about the Red Sea. If he told them, they would not have left Egypt. Same thing here, he didn't tell me the magnitude. If he did, I probably would not have even ventured into it. But basically, Africa's Brain Bank, it's a repository, it's a virtual repository of Africa's intellectual capital, intellectual property, and brain power. Think about, it's not a commercial bank, but think about, it says Africa's Brain Bank. So our chief, Sister Ayan, Dr. Rogers, all people of African descent, their brain belongs to Africa. Mm. And we know that we are scattered all over the place, all over the globe. We don't even know each other. So the vision of Africa's Brain Bank is to end that brain drain. With our brains scattered all over the place, there is a brain drain on the continent. Chief, you being here is a brain drain to Mama Africa because you are a son of the soil. So the vision is to end that brain drain by creating this repository of Africa's intellectual capital and collaborating with Africans like Melanin Radio and all of us here and all our brothers and sisters. It doesn't matter whether they've been here for more than 400 years or they just came yesterday. So long as we are not in Africa, you know, our brains have to go back to Africa. We're not asking everybody to go back to Africa. But so we want to collaborate to develop and serve Africa and Africans. And the mission, which the chairman will expand on that more, but the mission is to create this repository of Africa's intellectual capital, intellectual property, and brain power. So the Brain Bank is I can't take credit for it because that's not something that I, in my own power, would have come up with it. But when you know, most of us, if not all of us, have a bank account or at one point have had an account, what happens? You make a deposit, you make a withdrawal. Some people do wire transfers in these days of online banking, which you can consider Africa's Brain Bank an online banking institution of Africa's brain power. and capacity. So you achieve, you bring your brain power and deposit in there. Sister Ayan brings hers, Dr. Kumba brings his, I bring mine. We deposit it in there. Other Africans withdraw, they make withdrawal from our expertise. And if we need to do transfers, if we have to collaborate. So that's the kind of a picture I'm trying to create. So in a nutshell, that is what the Brain Bank is. There's a lot of aspects to it, but just to say to define it or to narrow it to exactly what it is, that's exactly what it is.
Wow, that's great, and it's so needed today. The continent is not only suffering; we're suffering here in the diaspora in many ways. And I've talked to many of those from the continent, and certainly our brothers and sisters here in the States. But we're in trouble, and we have the power and the ability to change our own condition. When I think about the fact that we spend over $1.4 trillion a year as a people, $1.4 trillion, that is, we would be the 8th to 13th strongest or richest nation in the world if we would only unify. When I think about the fact that our brain power, as you say, our disunity, that disunity is what's hurting us. And so I love the name after the Brain Bank and the mission to pull our people together, both on the continent and here in the diaspora, because we're the only ones who can change our condition. Let me ask Dr. Kumba.
Yes, sir.
You have I admire your work and your vision. Would you share with us your role as the chairman of Africa's Brain Bank, please?
Oh, thank you again. I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak with your audience tonight. My colleague Reverend Pam has already indicated the origin and the overall vision of the Africa's Brain Bank. My role there is to leverage my competency, my knowledge of African history and of African reality and on where we are today. As in the intro, I heard Professor John Henry Clark define what history is as the tool that helps one know where they are on the map of your human geography. My role is to leverage what I have and provide some guidance, some leadership in making progress towards that achievement of the Africa's Brain Bank. Incidentally, where the history that was well articulated in the incantations at the opening of this program is not very well known, and neither is it taught in our classrooms, not here in the U.S., not in Africa either. If you think that our curriculum here doesn't teach African history from an African perspective, well, it's probably even worse on the continent where you think things would be different. With that backdrop, we have an African world that is that has its people scattered across the planet, many ideas popping up, many flowers blooming, many efforts, many initiatives. Everybody is trying to do their best in their own space. And the question always comes in, as Mr. Lumumba was mentioning, and you just mentioned, do we need to be together as one? Do we need to unite? Or what does it mean to unite? Do we have the capacity? Is it necessary? Or can we collaborate? Or can we find a way to still work together without putting a barrier that is hard to cross, like the word unity? So my role is to leverage and work towards creating a platform where the African world can collaborate, what we're calling the Africa's Brain Bank. Collaborate by competencies. I'll give you an example. Some of us have come to have the understanding or the perspective that every country in the world is corrupt. The U.S., some of us argue that all the wars are out of corruption and profit that the U.S. has fought. Some of us can say that the European Union is the most corrupt. You hear U.S.-China war, you think that China is the most corrupt country, Russia. So there's no one who's not corrupt. Africa is not privy to that alone. But in that corrupt environment, in that environment where governance and leadership is usually seized by a few for their own purposes, what then makes some governments perform better than others? What makes the Western countries advance more? What enabled them to conquer Africa and the rest of the non-European world? It was their mastery. It was their mastery over the tools of war. Not exclusively. Sheikh Anta Diop talks about much of the character of the European, Indo-European people. But their mastery over the tools of war, the tools of control. In the modern times, we call it the mastery over science and technology. He who controls science and technology controls the rest of the tools of our life today. You see the new billionaires on the block after the oil titans of the 1800s and 1700s. The modern ones are those who master technology, the Facebooks, the Twitters, the Amazons, the Apples. So science dominates the world. So one of our efforts is to, my role, is to put science on the table of Africa. And so if we will go beyond slogans, beyond advocacy, then we have to put the tools of the modern society and collaborate. You have African scientists across the world. How do we create a platform for them to collaborate, to work together? So a scientist in South Africa knows what a colleague at Harvard is doing. Or a scientist in Barbados can have a tap and look around and see that maybe another colleague in Kenya is doing the same thing. The African world, can they collaborate? What are our ladies doing in science? So the STEM is a big agenda item for us. The laws that govern us, can science be a key component? In the US here, the National Science Foundation is a big enabler of US prowess in science. While other countries like Africa, Middle East, their power comes from their oil and natural resources. Well, they have that. We have the coltans, we have the minerals, but we're not the most powerful. The US GDP over the last 50 years is said to have been about 50% due to their science. So we are putting science at the center as one of the items where, when we say Africa's brain bank, where are African scientific brains? Are they scattered, non-collaborative, non-communicating, or we create a platform where they can collaborate a little bit more? The effort to suppress African knowledge is substantive, and we have to resist that by finding a way to collaborate. That's one aspect. The African Union just recently created the African Free Trade Area, making Africa one big market. One continental market area. What does it mean for Africa and the African world? What does it mean for the African in America? What does it mean for the African in the Caribbean? What does it mean for the Africa's sixth region, as they call it, outside the continent? How do they even contemplate collaborating? There are lots of efforts, money on the table. Africa has over 400 companies that gross over $1 billion a year in revenues.
Yes.
Most of them are European-based. Where is the African diaspora in that picture? How do they collaborate to find out what opportunities exist? Are we capable of doing that? So my role is to leverage my knowledge, my view of our world, complement the work of Reverend Pam and colleagues like you and those who will come on board, and say, we can do better in terms of collaborating. Africa doesn't belong to me or to you. It's to us. And the more we work solo or in small, very small subsets, the more we put ourselves out there to be destabilized by those who aim to do that all the time. So a platform to collaborate is what my role is, to guide and bring the competencies, seek the resources, seek the people who can help us achieve this goal. Africa needs to collaborate. Lots of activities going on. So the African world is rich. This radio show is one of the activities. It's rich.
Yes.
The information I got from you at the beginning, it gave me goosebumps to call my ancestors' names the way you call it. I would never call that name anywhere else that way in that context, maybe in my bedroom alone. So lots of rich Africa, as I said, lots of flowers blooming all over. But can we, my role is to enable, work towards enabling those flowers to be able to know where there are flowers are sprouting. If there's a sunflower there, can they tell where another sunflower is sprouting? If there is a business idea here, can they tell where the other one is? Or do we always have to go through European intermediaries, through non-African intermediaries to get to Africa? Can we just work with each other on our own platform? Amazon is a platform for technology. The technology itself doesn't even have to know who is trading on Amazon. Better get their money and then people trade without knowing who's trading with who. It's a marketplace. So my role is to leverage my knowledge of these ideas as I know them, convene more competencies to make sure that we make progress in this vision.
Thank you very much for that. You know, and let me add that we've had a chance to talk on many occasions, and you're absolutely right. And I've said in the past that our over 400 year sojourn in America, and among these other folks and other races and many experiences, has prepared us in such a way that we can return home and take our skill sets, our many skill sets, our love of each other, our abilities, and create a new reality for ourselves, which is what I saw the Brain Bank doing, and uniting those business owners, and both large and small, African-American business owners, to those in the continent, and thereby working together, forming alliances, building bridges, and creating new realities for ourselves without intermediaries. And this is very important, because as we look now, the stats, if you go look at the numbers, the national numbers, by 2050, they're saying our wealth as a people will be zero. In other words, we're not passing for the first time in the history of our sojourn in this country. This generation is not passing to our children a better condition, which means they're coming up having to struggle and start all over again. And so this is one way to tackle that. The unification of us through Africa's Brain Bank. Let me ask Reverend Pam about that a little bit. Can I get your thoughts on the unification of wedding those of us in the diaspora to those on the continent and how that's going?
Exactly. Thank you so much, Chief. And I am really overjoyed and gladdened with what I'm hearing on this program. You know, when I talk about Africans or we, I'm referring to all people of African descent, whether they're in the diaspora or on the continent. I think somebody alluded to this earlier, maybe it was the chairman or your chief. The diaspora is considered Africa's sixth region because there are five continents, you know, the north, the south, the east, and the west and central. You know, Chief, you and I arrive Ghana tomorrow, nobody would know you were not born and bred there until you open your mouth. We are cut from the same cloth, made of the same substance. We are brothers and sisters. And it is so important for us to remember that we are all children of Mama Africa. It doesn't matter whether we were separated at birth or Mama put us on the plane to come here. It doesn't really matter. It's the same thing. Every time a child is separated from the mother, they both suffer. The mother misses the child and the child misses home. But it is important for us to treat each other with respect and as one. We've been known, and I don't think it's intrinsic in us. I think this is something that was a label that was affixed on us by the oppressors. And we were taught that in school. Our people don't get along. Oh, our people sold our siblings. Or over here, our siblings think we're trying to take their job. All those are lies from the pit of hell. So it is important that we start learning to like each other, to love each other. You don't get to choose your family. You don't. If we look at Mama Africa and Africans, meaning all people of African descent, as members of your own extended family. In your nuclear family, you don't choose your brothers and sisters. You don't get to decide. But you put up with them. It doesn't matter whether they are dysfunctional or not. It doesn't matter whether they are mean or not. You put up with them because they are family. Once we start looking at each other as family, we are going to develop a little talk that says we are one and focus on the things that unite us more than the things that divide us.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, the reality is that we are our only saviors. I know because of the educational system that has whitewashed our minds, we can take something from it. It's not all a bad thing. We can take from that which is good for us and unite and build a new reality for ourselves. Dr. Kumba, if I can ask you about your knowledge of history. Have you ever seen a day like this day? Of course, we see ancient Babylon, Rome, those nations that have gone by the wayside. When I look at the national debt of $27 trillion, when I look at what's coming in, when I look at the racial climate, when I look at the condition of our children, our women, have you ever seen a time like this? Number one. Number two, just remind of us of that time.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. It's not like I missed you for a second, but I heard a question about how to deal like this.
Yes, I know you're a historian, and you so often refer to the days of yesterday, the days gone by. So I just wanted to pick your brain for a moment before we move on.
Oh, no. I have never seen a day like this. I mean, in practical terms, this is the only day that's ever been like this in terms of the evolution of the planet of the universe. But not only that, you know. In the incantations earlier, mention was made of ancient Kemet and their civilizations. I've traveled there and visited the museums and the pyramids, and seen what Africans did. I've been across the continent, seen what Africans did. I've been to Europe, I've been to the museums and seen what the Europeans did. I've been in the U.S. here and seen what the European immigrants who came and conquered this territory did for through the Declaration of Independence.
Yes. Is that Dr. Kumba? Okay, we have some challenges. Move on to Reverend Pam, the Africa's Brain Bank is expansive. And we were talking one day about the network and the IT systems. How is that going, and what areas can we make the public aware of that they may want to assist in the area of IT and other areas? Are there areas that we can use some assistance from our people?
Of course, before I go into specifics as far as the IT is concerned, our motto is collaboration, development, and services. So I want to encourage everybody to visit our website, www.africasbrainbank.org. The apostrophe is not there. So it's Africa's with an S, but with no apostrophe. So that website is www.africasbrainbank.org. The website does not do us justice. It's work in progress. It was set up just to cater for our inaugural event, which was last March. However, this IT repository we are trying to build, one of the delays have been finding an African or a person of African descent to take on that task. Because in at the Brain Bank, we believe that we are best suited and equipped to solve our own problems. So we are in the Brain Bank, you'll find just people of African descent and Africans, you know, building this Brain Bank. As far as development goes, we want to develop our human, our Africans, because our greatest resources are its people. So we're looking at human development, healthcare, social development, educational. The chairman talked about STEM, which is our flagship project, which is already in progress right now as we are speaking. Environmental development and a whole gamut of development. We have development specialists on the continent, on 4 of the 5 regions on the continent. And they are very, very excited. These are people that have been in development for decades. As far as service, the service part of the motto goes, every African or person of African descent, regardless of their socioeconomic stance, their financial status, religious or age, or, you know, their outward appearance, everybody is treated as a member of the family and equally. There's no discrimination. We, the team members, are servant leaders. We lead by serving and not serve by leading, like some people do. When you come to the Brain Bank, behind the scenes, the people there are people that roll their sleeves, like the chairman. I mean, this work is so demanding, even like you, Chief. It doesn't matter what is going on in our own private lives or personal lives, we make the time. A lot of times it's every day during the week. Sometimes it's 4 times a week, but it doesn't matter. So long as the need is there, we make the time to do it. And given the time zones with the people on the continent. So the greatest needs are two. One is the IT infrastructure. We need the competency to build that Brain Bank, which is a virtual a repository. This is not something that's happening because of the pandemic. This vision came in October 2017. It took a while to get it, you know, registered because of the name. But I'm just saying that is a priority, building this repository. Consider it home for all people of African descent. And the second need is financial resources. It takes money to do anything, to get things done. We have enough money in our community. Our people are not poor. Our people are very wealthy. But then, do they know that there's a need for an IT infrastructure in the Brain Bank? I bet you there's at least one or two brothers that can underwrite the building of that IT infrastructure. They just need to know. And that's why we need this Brain Bank, so that we know what our family members need.
And if I may jump in there, there may be some with us this evening that have that technological savvy and that skill set. And we are Africa's Brain Bank is a 503c, is a nonprofit organization. Is that correct?
Exactly, 501c3 nonprofit. Yes. Right. So everything is tax exempt. All donations are tax deductible, and the Brain Bank is registered here in the U.S.
Yes, you registered in U.S. Okay. And what else is the Brain Bank doing, or have you done lately? Whether here or in the continent?
Thank you so much for that question. The Brain Bank is working on a STEM mentoring program. We have an expert, I'll just share his first name, Dr. Jola, who's received several presidential awards in that area. But we are developing it bigger than what he used to work on.
Yes.
As far as the continent goes, we found out not too long ago that there were healthcare facilities that don't have access to water. I'm not talking about clean running water. I'm talking about water, period. Whether it's water from a tap or a well, they don't have it. It was difficult enough prior to the pandemic. In this pandemic, we're telling people, wash your hands. Wash your hands with what? They don't even have water to drink. So what are they going to wash their hands
with? I think that's very important to reiterate that we have brothers and sisters on the continent who don't have water. I'm talking about a hospital.
Yeah, so care facilities.
Because we're in America where there's in the land of so-called plenty, can't even fathom the thought of not having water in our homes or anywhere else. We're talking about a healthcare facility, you know, and it's not as if, but we're talking about the continent that has about 75-80% of the world's reserves in terms of gold, manganese, diamond, you name it.
That has money.
The richest continent on the planet has the poorest people. And so one day we'll dive into that. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yes, you know, so when we found out, you know, and because one of the things the Brain Bank does is we implement projects also. So if you are a brother or a sister here and you want to get a project done in Africa, that's one of the things we do. We have the competencies on the ground to get that executed. So we are executing this project, you know, for one of our sister's organizations. And the project is called Operation Borehole 55. It is being executed by Africa's Brain Bank team on the continent. We have an amazing team, dedicated team on the continent. So this is something that we put together in 90 days. Can you believe that? That's a Herculean task.
Well, don't you elaborate on that? When you say Borehole 55, it suggests water or something. Share with us what the Brain Bank was able to accomplish.
Okay, the borehole 55, that's actually one of a vision that the Lord had given me a couple of years ago, but it became very critical to do it after we found out in June during a live broadcast that there were healthcare facilities that did not have access to water. I couldn't even believe it. It was incredible. So I actually went online to Google it, and the problem is endemic. It is not. It's not just one facility. It's not just one country. I would dare to say 20-30% of healthcare facilities in rural communities in sub-Saharan Africa don't have access to clean running water and water. Period. We have videos to prove this, where a woman is coming to have a baby. There's no water, and there are some of those facilities only one delivery bed. And women are having, you have about 10 women giving birth in one day, during the night most of the time, and there's infection. Can you imagine giving birth and then there's no water to clean before the next woman comes? And you talk about a healthy pregnant woman goes to deliver a baby and comes out with an infection and even the baby getting infected. And the next thing you know, in a couple of months, you're losing your baby.
Yeah.
So that's a project that The Africa's Brain Bank is executing on the continent as we speak.
It is. And I hope everyone's hearing this because it is it's critical. And we have the competencies and the skill set and the training to go back home. I know President Adu of Ghana has welcomed us home to the continent, and over 2 million of us from America went back last year. And I'll be traveling this year, hopefully some of my children. And so it's very important that we reconnect because, again, I understand there's no street lights in many of the villages. I know Acorn is doing a great job putting up solar lights, but what the Brain Bank is doing is critical to establishing boreholes just for running water, period. And we don't talk about, you know, medicine and all these other things. And there's power, the powers that be know these things exist. You know, we'll talk later on another show about why these things exist and what we must do about it. It's time now for an awakening. And so we'll talk more about that, and we'll talk more about the Africa's Brain Bank and the future work of the Africa's Brain Bank and events that may be coming up soon in the next hour. But Dr. Kuma, have you made it back on?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here.
Yes, sir. I'd ask you a question about some of the history, because I love it when you share our Black history, our African history. I was hoping we can get you to, from your perspective, where are we today in history? Why is the Brain Bank necessary and relevant?
Where we are today in history, as I was trying to mention a little bit earlier, is that we are where I would call Africa rising. Africa having its sight, not from a distance, but really looking, caring. They are caring. They are not thinking about it. They are not envisioning it. That's why we're tired. They don't want vision about imagining. They don't have wanting. They don't have contemplating. They are actually looking at it with their eyes. It's like you stand across the river and see the other side. They are actually already taking the boat. They are actually on the boat.
Hard to hear you, Dr. Kuma. You come closer to your mic, please.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure. Okay, all right. Yeah, I can hear you. Let me correct this.
Yes.
So the African world is right here at the promised land. They see very clearly. Again, the Floyd incident, the election of President-elect Biden, it makes it very clear that even though the reality on the continent itself might still be wanting of better, because the continent is still very much under colonial control, the Joseph of Africa, the African in America especially, not in the Americas, not just the Caribbean and the diaspora, but in the United States of America, those ones, they have attained a point where what they can achieve at a global level gives hope that Africa indeed is seeing with its two eyes the promised land. It will be very near. The pace is fast. It will be very near. Only 60 years from civil rights, from sitting at the back of the bus, from being segregated to sitting in the White House. That is a feat that history has not yet appropriately accounted for, appropriately put in context and understood. The speed of change. And that's where we are potent and feared, because the speed of change, the speed of our potency, it's tremendous. To be more direct, I see Africa rising very, very close, just reaching his hand out to the promised land. That promised land where they are not viewed, or they can contribute to a world where one race, one group, one gender, any other human is not viewed as inferior to the other. It's not viewed, nor inferior in terms of class, as the socialist systems would want to define class, and Karl Marx talked about it, but just in terms of the human being as a human being, as flesh and blood, as competent as others. So that historical role of being the first human who humanized the world, gave its first precepts of science, philosophy, and religion, of yes. culture, is coming back, maybe, just maybe, to rehumanize the world after it lost that power structure and someone else took it, destabilized it. The African world might just be coming back to restore that human world. That's my reading of history. And it's very clear. It's very clear that we are right there at the brink. Don't be fooled by nuclear power. Don't be fooled. You can see nowadays in the world, nuclear power is insignificant. The fight with North Korea and Iran, that's hush-posh. You know, the fight nowadays is on the internet. Nobody's going to blow up any nuclear weapon. It's mutual assured destruction. That's just power play. The real fight in the world is on the human being itself, the culture, those who dominate, not those who control the nuclear weapons only. So power play is there. We get taken away by war and peace and get out there. But my brother, look at how far the African in America has come just in 60 short years, all since Reconstruction. Look at how far they have come from being chartered animals to ruling the planet. We have come so far, and the world will be much better when we get there.
Thank you. Thank you. That's so insightful. I agree, which is one of the reasons we got together to bring this message to this platform and to the world. Our people that can hear us on the continent and throughout America, it's critically important in this day and hour that we find a way. One way is through Africa's Brain Bank to unite our efforts, our resources, our ideas, the ability to collaborate in terms of our businesses. If we have a business and you want to grow it, then this is a place to meet someone of like mind and start those collaborations and those talks that would lead up to the unification of those two entities to make a larger, and then be able to hire your people. We have that responsibility of hiring our people, of teaching our children. You guys spoke of STEM, science, technology, education,
engineering, mathematics,
and mathematics, economics, mathematics. You have a program for young women on the continent. Can you share some of that with us?
Yes, certainly. As I alluded earlier, we've come, those of us who are in the sciences, to understand that what distinguishes the ruled in the modern world from the rulers is mastery of science and technology, STEM. Science, the nuclear weapons, the internet, the GPS, the satellite systems and communication systems, the healthcare technologies, you know, all of that. The things that make some countries more prosperous, stronger than unlike others, it's mastery of technology. So if Africa is going to get its rightful place, why we applaud those who marched barefoot prior to the 60s, i.e. the 60s civil rights, to get us to where we are today? We recognize that to sit at the corporate table, if half of Google, if half of Apple, if half or a substantive part, if the next big tech item will come from the black world, it has to be, they have to understand the STEM. They have to master it in the most advanced level. Otherwise, yeah, they will not be able to create the next thing. The Koreans are strong today, not because they are better. Samsung phone, the Samsung phone alone, Samsung, the company, they employ over 250,000 people, that company, that one company, 250,000 employees. And hear this, over 41,000 are computer scientists alone. Computer science, just one subject. That's what gives all of Korea its power. Without this, Korea would not be the powerful world country that we're talking about today. Look at Amazon, look at Apple, look at again the modern technology. So we want to impress, we want to bring such also, leverage our competencies for Africa. In Africa, the post-colonial world has not been as prosperous as elsewhere, and we understand the dynamics of that. One of it has been the deprivation of the continent from scientific know-how, purposeful. We should understand from this program that under development, poverty in Africa is not lack of what to do. It's purposeful policy. It's not an error. It's not that the head of state, the ministers, the leadership doesn't know what to do. They know. But under development and poverty is purposeful policy by those who rule and make the policies. That's how the world, some of us to be up, some of us to be down. But we want to bring science from at the STEM from the basic level. The numbers are more skewed towards men like everywhere else. For a continent that is currently 1.2 billion people, and when you look at the demographics, that in 30 years there will be 2.4 billion, they will double, of which 40% of all of the world's population will be in Africa. More than half will be young girls. We are putting together a program to pipeline up to 1 million girls into STEM fields every year. And we need sponsors, supporters, advocates, partners. 1 million is not a big number. For a continent, it's not a country. We are not talking about one country. For a continent of 1.2 billion people, more than half are women, 600 million, to pipe 1 million girls into STEM fields is minimal. We don't see it valuable to talk of STEM in terms of a small program that gives you 10 scientists, the first woman to do this, the first person to do that. That's too passe. We're not at that level anymore. We want a mass movement of scientists. We want critical mass to be able to move the needle. Without critical mass, we celebrate one icon, but we don't move the whole system.
So we want to pipeline. Kimber, I want to continue. Didn't mean to cut you off, but we want to take a station break and come right back. And I'd like you to continue, if you would. I have some things I'd like to share as well. But stand by. We'll be right back.
Sure, thank you.
No industry is void of the need for security. Crime is on the rise, and every industry is affected. Your business needs to be proactive. Safe and Secure Protection provides lowest-cost security uniformed officers, vehicular patrols, crowd control, loss prevention agents, and more. We protect construction sites, bank or office lobbies, warehouses, shipping and cargo, schools, government buildings, hotels, car lots, and more. Call 888-476-6388 now for a free quote. Guaranteed to beat all competitors' prices. Visit SafeSecureWorldwide.com.
Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, a thought leader and philosopher, academic, thinker, anthropologist, and Egyptologist, arguably the most accomplished writer of African origin on African history. Born in Senegal, 1923, Diop set his path in his late teens by showing interest in anthropological studies. After finishing high school in Senegal, he set his sights on France, where he aimed to obtain a higher education qualification. His first tertiary degree was in philosophy. He later acquired 2 diplomas in chemistry, after which he shifted his interests towards Egyptian civilization, and in 1952 submitted a doctoral thesis proposal titled, "Who Were the Pre-Dynastic Egyptians?" Diop is a pioneer in research on the Egyptian pharaonic lineage. His findings on this subject prove that the great Egyptian pharaohs and dynasties who oversaw the building of the pyramids are black people of African origin. His work also touches on great African civilizations, like the likes of the kingdoms of Mali, ruled by the world's wealthiest man, Mansa Musa or Gongo Musa, and his explorer brother, Abubakari II, Mansa Ku, who was known to have sailed the Americas way before European Christopher Columbus. Diop lectured chemistry and physics whilst continuing with his research on matters of interest. Part of his academic work includes translating Einstein's theory of relativity to his home language of Wolof. Amongst his famous works, Pre-Colonial Black Africa, The African Origin of Civilization, Myth or Reality, Civilization or Barbarism, which is his last published work, as well as Black Africa, The Economic and Cultural Basis for a Federated State, in which he decries the dependency of Africa on Western aid organizations like the IMF and World Bank. He argues that if utilized to its fullest capacity, the riverbanks of Africa, the Nile, Niger, Limpopo, and Congo can produce enough food to feed all of Africa and Europe combined. An excerpt in it reads, "It can be said that until the 15th century, Black Africa never lost its civilization." Diop wrote over 10 books in his lifetime and continues to be one of modern anthropology's greatest brains. A versatile mind, he founded three political parties in Senegal, which played the role of opposition in the West African country. Due to his political activity and pan-African thought, he was arrested in the 1960s. Dr. John Henry Clark, a friend of over 20 years, says, "We have not shown enough appreciation of Sheikh Anta Diop as a thinker." And adds, "I acknowledge Diop as the finest single mind produced in Africa in the 20th century. In honor of his work and legacy, the University of Dakar in Senegal is now named after him. Diop's writings were not without criticism and rejection because his work contradicted some of the work written by writers of European origin on Africa. But he was brave enough to challenge old historic tales of African history as written by her oppressors. He advocated for the preservation of African languages. And to quote the larger-than-life Sheikh Anta Diop, "European languages must not be considered diamonds displayed under a glass ball, dazzling us with their brilliance." Diop passed away at the age of 62 in 1986.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
And so, welcome back. Let me go through our lineup and share with you all the fantastic shows that we have with the Time for Awakening Media lineup. And please write this down and be sure to share it with family and friends. This is where you get conscious Black radio. There's no, you know, all that crap that we listen to in the world out there, but this way you come and have dialogue with your family throughout the world and get conscious and build relationships. They say that if all the Black people start spending money among ourselves, in 1 year, we will create over 1 million millionaires. If Black folks start spending money among themselves, we will create over a million millionaires in 1 year. Can we break the cycle and get that done? On Monday, for example, 10 a.m. from 11 to 1, African Perspectives with hosts Brother Oshi, from 6 p.m. to 8, Acres of Diamonds, hosted by Brother Jihad Ahmed. From 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central is hosted by Dr. Kaban and Sister Kaban, his wife, I would imagine. From 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations, first and third Mondays of every month. On Tuesday, from 8 to 10, Black Family, a Black Reality Think Tank by the great one and only Dr. Rogers. On Thursday night now, it's us. And you all that know me, you know, it's my first time out, but we're having a great time. It would get better. And we have a great lineup coming to you from our millionaire family, billionaire family, historians, and we're going to bring you powerful information. On Fridays from 8 to 10, Time for an Awakening. Got to be there. Be there or be square. Saturday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Sister Talk with Sister LaWanda Chambers. 7 p.m. to 9, we have Elders of Sankofa. Guys, got to be there, hosted by Alfonso Watkins. And on Sunday, 7 p.m. to 9, the Time for Awakening. Thank you. And we're going to open up the lines in this next segment.
those of you who have questions, and please share the fact that we're on. Because we, these folks, Reverend Pam and Dr. Kumba, has come and spent their time with us to give us this valuable information. They are working diligently and hard from all over the planet, in truth, particularly in Africa. As she said earlier, there's no water in the medical centers. There's so many challenges, and only we can make a dent in it if we just lend our services, our wisdom, our love, our know-how, and our monies. You know? And so if you need a place to get a tax write-off before the end of the year, Reverend Pam, if you are, tell us how they can contact Africa's Brain Bank again to lend their services, lend their brain power, and share their love monetarily with Africa's Brain Bank. What's the best way for them to do that?
Thank you so much, Chief. Before I answer that, I would like to congratulate you. You're doing so awesome on your first show. You are amazing. So I want you to know that. They can go to our website, www.africasbrainbank.org. There are donation buttons there. We also have PayPal. We take PayPal. We take Cash App. And they can also email us at info@africasbrainbank.org. They need more information. But I would like to encourage all our brothers and sisters who are in business, entrepreneurs. The Brain Bank is a good place to advertise your business because it's going to be there for your brothers and sisters to see them, and to patronize and to support you. We need to start patronizing each other. We need to start supporting each other. And we need to start, you know, promoting each other. So that website, again, is www.africasbrainbank.org. And for those who don't own businesses but would just like to make a donation, it's Africa's Brain Bank is a 501c3 nonprofit organization registered here in the U.S., and you will get a tax write-off for your taxes. A lot of people, a lot of businesses, especially toward the end of the year, are trying to write off some things. So Africa's Brain Bank will be a good place to make that donation. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Brothers and sisters, you know, we're not getting any money from, and shouldn't expect money from any other race, anybody else. This is something we must do. And so I'm asking us to break old habits because we really don't want to share with each other. We hoard money. We buy foolish things. You know, again, $1.4 trillion being spent, barely none of that coming in. Instead, the money that comes in our community that we spend stays less than 24 hours. And other communities are enjoying 7 to 15 to 20 and 30 days worth of spending their money with their own people. This is not separatism. This is not racist talk. This is real talk because it is time for an awakening. And it's a struggle for us. I get it. It's a struggle for us to take and change our mind about all that we're taught because we bought into this system. And it's okay. It's okay. But now it's time to do something for self. You must. Otherwise, Martin Luther King said it best. We either come together as brothers or we perish together as fools. I believe we're wise enough to come together and create a new reality for our children and our children's children. It's not about the older folks now. It's not about my age group and older. It's about the youth. And so if we don't pass on this legacy, that's why you must tune into all of those shows I told you about earlier. We're not just talking to them. So we want you to enjoy it. And so let me open up. Let me start. I'll get on my soapbox. But I want to open up to the public and those. So we got a lot of people on the air. If you have any questions about Africa's Brain Bank, feel free to chime in at this time. The lines are open. We're going to continue to talk. Just jump right in with whatever questions or ideas. If there's a topic or something you want to talk about in terms of Africa or what, in the context of what we're talking about, please jump in. This is your station. All right? I had to be shy, family.
Brother Jones, this is 334, Brother Theo out of Montgomery. I wanted to congratulate you on your inaugural program, you and Sister Bonisawa Ayan, and all the best to you in your endeavors. The question that I have for Reverend Pam and Reverend and Dr. Akumba is, how could Africa's Brain Bank be used as a tool to be able to help evaluate us as a people, and from those evaluations, we are able to be empowered?
Thank you so much. I am going to respond briefly, then I'll let the chairman expand on it. Thank you so much, first of all, for dialing in and for your question. You know, being a brain bank, it's like a virtual home. And you're talking about as using it as a tool to evaluate our people. You bring your competency. For example, you go to the website, www.africasbrainbank.org. There's a form there. You fill it out, fill out your expertise. You don't need to give us your home address or anything like that. Just basic information on your charity, I mean, on your specialty. So we look at the different expertise that we have, the different competencies that we have in a diverse industry, and then we evaluate our people based on what we have. If you did not zoom in into this call or dial into this call today, I would not even know you are there. And you're my brother. And you have competencies that I don't have, competencies that the chairman doesn't have. That we can benefit from each other. Consider it an ecosystem. There are some brothers and sisters that want to go back home, but and the brain bank can make that happen. But not everybody needs to go back home, and not everybody can go back home. But your brains can go. So you bring it into the brain bank, and then your brothers and sisters, it doesn't matter where they are, it's not limited to any zip code, they will tap into it. But then, for us to be able to evaluate our people, we need to know who they are, and we need to know where they are, and we also need to know what they are doing or what they can do. Because there are opportunities out there that you don't know, but that you are competent and qualified and eligible to take advantage and to benefit from those opportunities. So I will let the chairman expand on your question. Over to you, Dr. Kumba.
Sure. I appreciate the question. So that's the whole idea. I read your question, so evaluate. Not in the sense that we will evaluate in an exam or, you know, check who's doing well or who's not doing very well. The whole purpose of the Africa's Brain Bank is to provide a collaborative platform. And when you are part of the Africa's Brain Bank, you would have a sense of what others are doing or are not doing. You will have a sense of what others are doing better than you. Some kind of self, some kind of looking around in the neighborhood, global neighborhood of the African world, to see those who are doing better or as well, or that you could collaborate with. So it's difficult to say you will evaluate. Evaluation sometimes means developing criteria for good and not good, for success and not success. Different sectors, different industries could have their metric for evaluation. When we talk of the advancement of the African world, of business opportunities, of scientific development, of human capital, of all the things that will make the African world move a needle further towards its promised line, it's hard to put a needle on what it means to say evaluate of who is doing right. Was Malcolm better than Martin Luther King? Was Mandela better than Gaddafi or better than Kuma? Those questions are misnomers. They don't arise because everyone is doing their own in their own sector. But when we are part of the internal evaluation of who's doing well or who's not, you know, the world evaluation, the way in academia it would suggest. But as part of the Africa's Brain Bank, you become part of a platform that knows who else is doing similar things to know what you could be doing better. Or you yourself have a self-evaluation of if you're doing well or not. So in itself, it's a self-reflective system. It's a system that situates you among the whole among the broad sea of possibilities and opportunities and people to know where you are and what you could be doing. And subgroups can evaluate themselves. Out of the Brain Bank community, subgroups that collaborate can do their own internal evaluation. Like, you know, at the university, at the school, a classroom does their own thing. A department does their own thing. Or a particular college does their own thing. So within the Africa's Brain Bank, a particular sub-community of scientists or of business entrepreneurs or of whatever profession that is, they'll have their own criteria, but they will evaluate not based on external metrics, on their own internal metrics. It would circumvent the need for always going by Western criteria. I would not say you are doing well because somebody in Europe says you are doing well. I would not say I'm doing not well because somebody in China says I'm not doing very well. I would say you are doing well because from my relationship with you, my interaction with you, I see you are doing very well relative to nobody else but me. So we don't need an intermediary to tell us where to assess us. But, so through the African Brain Bank, sub-communities would coalesce and cluster together as they know each other. And then from there, they do their thing. But it's difficult to contemplate, at least for me at this point in time, to contemplate a large frame of the word evaluate. Sub-communities, sub-sectors, sub-groups can do internal evaluation. But if Black world cannot be evaluated in any way, it's not like the World Bank says that, you know, or gives you an A or A plus, A minus rating, or like, you know, the United Nations tells you that governance indicators, you're not governing well or you're governing well. Those criteria, it's hard to apply globally to us. Some of those things, we have to reverse them altogether and not be bought into external criteria. Some of those would be developed. How do I evaluate that you're teaching history very well? Yes, the sub-community of history teachers in the Africa's Brain Bank, they'll know whether you're teaching history to African kids. Are you teaching Napoleon or Toussaint Louverture? Are you teaching about Churchill or about Haile Selassie or about Emperor Ramses? Who are you teaching about? So sub-communities will evaluate themselves without going through external criteria. Some will have to be developed on their own, based on their competencies. So the Africa's Brain Bank would create the platform for collaboration, and sub-communities will do their thing as they so wish. Where you're competent, you do your thing. Where I am, I do my thing. And together we move forward.
Thank you, Reverend Pam, and thank you, Dr. Kumba.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
You're very welcome, brother. And we got another question from 919. Are you there?
Just listen, my brother.
Yes, sir. How are you, sir?
All right, Hotep. Just listen for the first time program.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, thank you for being with us. I just wanted to. I was on with on Dr. Rogers' show, and I did hear you speak. And any thoughts at all this evening from you, or just?
You said you. I didn't hear. I couldn't hear you that time. You said you were something with Dr. Rogers.
Well, I think you were on his show one evening. I was listening.
Yeah. I've been on his show several times. Uh huh.
Well, thank you for blessing us with your presence on this.
Oh
show.
I'll have something to say. Probably. I've just listened tonight, being the first night, and just trying to understand what the African Brain Trust was all about. Dr. Rogers told me about it this evening, so I said, let me tune in, and then I'll be telling some other people about the program, too.
Well, I really appreciate it. And so, let's see here. I guess you're 010? I have a question, 010-641. Still there?
That's not still me calling.
I'm sorry.
That's not still me, is it?
No. 602. I got another caller. 602. Your question, please.
Yes. Good evening to you, and good evening to the panelists on the line. You know, we were talking about Brain Bank. And, you know, Stephen Biko said the greatest weapon that the enemy has is the mind of the oppressed. And we know that slavery and colonialism was not the destruction of the body, but was the destruction of the mind, which was never corrected and addressed. Now, my question is, is about that uninspiring curriculum being taught in Africa. You know, we know here we have a problem because we try to get a curriculum of inclusion here in America and they kick it out. But in Africa, the governments in Africa have the power. They at least the curriculum. So what can, you know, input can the African Union contribute? Because I see they are one of the partners for your organization. So what input can they have to help to change that curriculum, that uninspiring curriculum, to a more progressive, pro-African curriculum? And I'll hang up and I'll mute my phone and wait for the response. Anybody can answer. Thank you very much.
Let me say thank you for that question. Wonderful. Thank you very much. I'm going to just say that all of us, those on the continent, those of us in the diaspora, have been affected by this so-called educational system. It is not, in my opinion, developmental nor positive nor developmental for us in the sense that we're not able to take what we learn and unify the elements that are missing and unify and create a new reality for ourselves. The Muslims call it jihad, an internal jihad, a war with oneself, where you know, so if you're on drugs and you can't get off, no greater war than the struggle of trying to get yourself off the drugs. So it's almost the same thing with the educational system. If we cannot use the knowledge that we've acquired in this country to create a new reality for ourselves because of the dross, the other trash that has been loaded up in our mental computer, then that's you mentioned it when you first started speaking. You know, that's a great challenge. But it is through these forms and through the Time for Awakening platform that we get to go to the hospital by having dialogue. I'm going to defer your question, though, to Dr. Kumba, and certainly Reverend Pam can chime in as well. Dr. Kumba, your thoughts?
Yes, the African Union is ultimately at the forefront of this work, of Africa's advancement. The African world is still so much under domination, especially the continent itself. The work of Kwame Nkrumah at the founding of the African Union was exactly what you are saying. The reason why he stands so tall in African historiography is because he did just what you are suggesting for the African Union to do. He helped create the African Union for that purpose. He articulated most of what we are saying today.
We're losing you again, Dr. Kumba.
Am I on?
Yeah, sure, you're on. It was just your mic was faint.
Okay.
Couldn't hear your voice.
So much of what we are talking about today, yeah, I think that he articulated and advocated. Now, why was he taken out? He barely has 6 years to rule in Ghana. Patrice Lumumba, at the beginning of this program, he was giving homage to Nkrumah about this, that he barely has 6 years to rule. Yeah, Lumumba for the overthrow of Nkrumah. Not only Nkrumah, the Nyerere, those who created the African Union, their goal was exactly to do this thing. Lots of efforts have been done. There have been African American African diaspora conferences
A large one was held in 2012 in Durban, South Africa. The leadership of the African diaspora from the Caribbean to the USA was there. In the 90s, Reverend Leon Sullivan, out of Philadelphia, he had the African-American Leadership Conference that brought African leaders on the continent, heads of state, ministers, with African-American leaders. Jesse Jackson, being most visible at that time in the 90s, a whole class of leadership. Efforts have been done in that line. But it's not a straight line. It hasn't been a straight line for them because, as I was mentioning, poverty and underdevelopment is not for lack of effort or lack of not knowing what to do. It's purposeful policy by those who still dominate the world. Africa is still dominated. And so their efforts are doing what you say. The African Union's efforts are doing what you say, are still finding lots of pushback from those who rule the world. The creation of the Africa Free Trade Area by the African Union is precisely an attempt by African young leaders to circumvent political unification by going through an economic route, because the forces that dominate the world have made sure that political union is very difficult. And so they've tried to circumvent that barrier by doing the trade, free trade, which itself is still tenuous. So the African Union is doing its best for this, but they are up. There's a huge uphill task in front of them. Every African Union chairmanship election is a tug of war. When you're electing your U.S. president here, it's a tug of war among the electorate, the Republicans versus the Democrats. When you hear Russia or any foreign power interfere with it, the cry is, it's like the whole country comes to war against that country, against the whole U.S. comes to war against that foreign interference. In Africa, when they're electing a president, it's actually a tug of war, not among the people in the country, but among the foreign countries that dominate that country. Foreigners have a bigger say in selecting their leaders and the African Union leaders than the Africans themselves. The tug of war is reversed. So you have that control of the continent, and the controllers provide pushback on every effort. That's how Nkrumah was taken out. That's how the Sankaras were taken out. That's why the Gaddafis have been taken out. That's why the independence era, the coup d'etats, counter-coup d'etats were there. It's not because Africans cannot rule themselves or they're barbaric. These are people trying to find a day of life, and they're facing resistance from those who rather keep them enslaved. The African-American, when I mentioned that they are the Joseph, is because the African-American cannot be destroyed in America without the American itself being destroyed. You cannot destroy the African-American in America without destroying America itself. So America cannot survive by destroying African-American. They are tied, the belly of the beast. They are tied together. They have to grow together. So that gives you latitude. If you look back at Rosewood, the African-American Wall Street, as they call it, back in the 30s, that was bumped right here. Your own ruling class was bumped right here. Suppose African-Americans were a country of their own, separate from America. They could bomb you like that and nobody ever hear about it. They bomb the Caribbean and no one hears about it. Once they can draw a boundary between you and them and separate you and them, you're up for bombing without question. But when you're tied at the umbilical cord, it's hard to separate and destroy one without the other one, to destroy the parasite without the host being killed. So this is the dynamics of global power. Africa is doing its best. The African Union is fighting hard as you can ever imagine. The regular Africans are fighting. In just last 2 weeks, you heard about Nigeria. The youth folks were trying to rise up. The army came in. Who rules the army? Who rules the leadership? This is not to give mean that we cannot do anything. But when you hear a coup d'etat in Africa, you know that there's some foreigner trying to push back progress. When you hear something going wrong in Africa, you know that somebody, some external power, is trying to push back African progress. It's always the way it goes. Give a dog a name and take it and get rid of it. So the African Union is doing its best. It behooves upon you and I to walk through the African brain bank or any other mechanism that we can contribute. Donate money. Donate time. Educate yourself. Go through the jihad that Brother Jones is talking about. Go through the internal war within you to recognize your ignorance, your miseducation, your deficiencies, that you could do better as a human being, as an African, spiritually, as a family person, as a contributor to the African world. Don't only ask someone else to do it. You are your own spot. What do you do? Together we can do a lot. But the African world, the African Union, the African government, they are doing their own best. Just like you and I are doing our own here. But progress doesn't come just because you are doing your own best. History has its way of unfolding. Nobody ever knew Floyd would spark this kind of reversal of American conscience. But the efforts were being made. Nobody knows what will spark the next rise of Africa. And we make our own effort. We hold the fort. We play defense until the time to play offense arises. Maybe the next generation, maybe the next 10, 20, 30, but the time will come. For the meantime, we are doing our best. The Africa's Brain Bank is part of that effort. I mentioned earlier that Africa is rich, is vibrant, lots of ideas, opportunities, efforts, initiatives here and there. Everybody's hustling for something. Some are sprouting good fruits, some are not, as it should be. But overall, I believe in the African world. They're not sleeping. We didn't come this far because we're incompetent and we're not doing anything. So when we talk about Africa, we should recognize that in the whole, our trajectory has been upward, very steep slope. And the fact that we've been upward in our trajectory means we know we've been doing very well on the average overall, more than anybody else in the world. So believe in yourself that the African Union is doing their best. African governments are doing their best. The media, the history books, those who want to dominate, as you say, control our minds to control us, the way Steve Biko would say it, they are there controlling our minds. Fight that jihad within you for your mind. Go through your own jihad for your mind. You will see that the African world is by far more prospective, more positive than anybody else can. Those who read and know history, who follow it very well, they will understand this. Just understand, for the African-American, for the African world, who have gone from being enslaved brutally to be colonized and gain their independence and be at the seat on the table is no joke. In such a short time. You and I, lifespan is 50, 80, 90 years old, so it seems like it's a long time. No, history is a longer trajectory. 400 years is a short time in Africa's 10,000-year history. It's a short blip. So the time unfolds, and we are, and in my mind, I think we're doing well.
Yes, this is
Boniswa. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I've been listening to the program, and I love what I've been hearing, and I just wanted to share a little something.
Please do.
I'm a total believer in what Garvey said, and that's Africa for the Africans. So there's a lot that needs to be done as we're talking about. And in the future, I'd like for us to talk about how we move, you know, these other groups out of the continent, because they're doing a pretty effective job at moving in and taking control, in addition to the Europeans. And one of the things that we can continuously do and make it a very serious initiative through whatever organization, the African Brain Bank, which I love the name, I love what you're doing, and that's to begin to work on decolonizing the African mind, just as we talk about Black folk in America emancipating ourselves from mental slavery. Because if we didn't have colonized minds, this work would have been done. This work would have been done, or we would be in process of really making great progress.
You sound like me. Go ahead.
Well, you know we're like-minded, brother. Yes, but as long as they have control of our minds, we will talk about how great we are and can be and were, but we won't be able to implement the things in the way, the initiatives in the way that we can. So specifically, two of the weapons that were used to colonize the African mind, and this is, you know, historical, as Brother Bruce just, you know, his voice just came up. He's an historian also. In their work in invasion across the globe, the strategy was to Europeanize the African, and second is to Christianize the African. So those two things have to be undone. And the you know, de-Christianizing, I want to specify the Eurocentric Christianizing. Africans anywhere, nowhere, have any business seeing a white Jesus as their savior. That keeps the mind in a certain state of psychological devastation and enslavement, because you're seeing someone that you see as your savior looking just like your oppressor. And so that maintains a feeling and sustains a feeling of inferiority. And we've got to break that dynamic of white superiority and African inferiority, which has been marketed for centuries. So that part has to be addressed, because we can move powerfully, but we've got to heal our minds. And we can do it. We can literally establish centers. Deprogramming centers. There's a lot that we can do. I want to inject that piece in, because we have so many people, you know, Thomas Sankara and so many people that were mentioned that when our leaders are killed off because we still carry colonized minds, then the masses just kind of back off. We have to keep it going.
Yes. Great.
Brother Jones,
go ahead, Dr. Kumba.
If I may chime, I share that, my sister. I share that. Maybe we can think of another program that's based on concrete action items, on possibilities, and they exist. The Africa's Brain Bank came about for that purpose. While we are talking in generalities and optimistic tone, and maybe recycling you and I seem to be on the same side here, so we're pretty much pushing to the crowd, each other. But our audience out there, I'm not sure about the breadth of variety in your audience. But the Africa's Brain Bank comes about because it wants to create a platform for those action items where subgroups can work. What you are alluding to, the mental component, the religious and spiritual component, the academic and curricular component, the cultural component, music, and you name it. We have thoughts and expectations on how we can work together. It will start by letting the African world collaborate with itself on that. It's difficult to consider somebody sitting in the Bronx or in LA or here in Detroit and do Africa without working with Africa. Or somebody in Africa trying to do the African world without benefiting from the work of somebody like Asante in Temple. All the work of the Pan-African movement that came out of the U.S., the Du Bois, the people like Du Bois and Carter G. Woodson. That literature is not common on the continent. It takes interaction between continental and diasporic Africans for this information to exchange, for us to realize how silly, how miseducated, how much what we think is best is actually maybe worse. By for example, thinking that Jesus is white, when make the case that, look, is that really true? It takes the kind of communication, interaction, community building, think tanks, cluster groups, study groups, action items between like minds, like communities, like sectors, professional lines, for this to emerge. I can hear all the speeches that are out there. And we many of us hear all of them. We replay them all the time. But at a level of concrete steps, step 1, 2, 3, 4, who is where, who can do what, and what do we do? I'll be in agreement that we can think of another program that focused on that and how the African Brain Bank can help in that process. And your audience, I will invite you, join the African Brain Bank. That's what we're all about.
That is correct. Which is why I fell in love with it. And thank you, Sister Bonisa, for your input.
Another quick thing, Brother Lance. I was also thinking about the fact that we should make some, I don't like to use the word should, but make some efforts to fall in love with Africa. Because we have been pitted against each other so deliberately.
Right, that's correct.
And we need to undo that. I have my own personal experience with not really identifying with Africa, even though I identified as a black nationalist. I didn't identify as a Pan-Africanist.
Yes.
And when I moved to North Carolina, It was very strange coming from New York, moving to North Carolina. I started meeting all Africans from everywhere, Ghana, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Niger, you name it. And I began to fall in love with Africa once I started experiencing the culture and the humanity.
Okay, well,
of the
all
right.
Africans.
And so we work on developing relationships right now and make that a very specific goal that we all can do.
All right. We'll talk further about that. And certainly Africa's Brain Bank is a place where we can have that dialogue and even, you know, set up something to start tackling that issue because there are many. I got another call on the line at 267. 267, are you still there? 267-333. Okay. I think we have synergy because, you know, at least in this forum and this platform that we're talking on tonight, we have like minds. I think we keep wrapping that up, keep having these discussions about how we do better and not worry about and put systems in place among us and make it available to our people as opposed to, talking about, you know, those who've been our adversary.
Chief, may I?
Yeah. Please.
Just a quick comment on our brother's question on this mindset thing. Our brother who quoted Steve Biko. A good place to start looking at it, yes, the African Union is the main body of the continent. However, you know, we as individuals need to start play our own role. But to be able to play that role, let's use the same weapon that the oppressors used to slave our people, the mind. And we all know the mind is the center of our emotions, our will, our reasoning. So once you get to the mind, you get to the body and to the spirit. So in shows like this radio, this Melanin Radio, and the work that the Brain Bank is doing, both on the continent and in the diaspora, that's a good place to start. You start giving people information. There was a time when the people that controlled the world were the people that owned industries. I'm not going to mention their names because they are not part of the Brain Bank. You know, a lot of them are dead anyway, but our descendants are still drawing from the generational wealth that they created. But this people, they came at our minds. Not you and I, but our foreparents. And enslaved us and colonized our minds. And that's been the biggest hindrance to our progress. But now we as Africans, and we're not the first people addressing this. Even our brother, James Brown, did this song, say, "I'm saying loud, I'm black, I'm proud." And it did something to the morale, to the mindset of the people that were listening at the time. So it's a combat upon each and every one of us in our own small way. And those of us who are involved in organizations like Brain Bank to do more. And hopefully, the government and the governmental organizations or political organizations will catch up.
Yes.
But we're making a difference, even with the STEM program we are doing. The chairman talked about 1 million girls in STEM on the continent. Can you imagine 1 million female STEM experts? With all due respect to our brothers, nothing against that, but I'm just saying, you train a woman, you train a whole nation. In this case, a whole race of people. So we are using the same weapon that they use to get to our people. So I want to encourage our brother. It's not even dependent. Let's not rest it on the plate of the African Union. Let's rest it on our individual plate. And if each and every one of us, everybody under the sound of my voice and all the speakers on this platform, will reach out to one person of African descent, either here in the diaspora or on the continent, and share this message, share information. The people that are prosperous now are people that have the correct information and know how to apply it. There are people who don't even know about social media or the internet, but that's where the power is.
That's right.
And we use that platform to educate our people. What are they watching on the internet?
Yeah.
What are they doing with their watch app? Are they using it to share important information, educational materials, things that will empower people, or are they using it to bully?
Excellent point. Excellent point, Reverend Pam. We got one more I want to get him in before we close out. 57336.
Yes. Oh.
Go ahead with the question, comment.
Is that me, brother?
577-336-577.
Oh, no, that's not me. I have a comment, too, but I'll let that one go first.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I want to thank Sister Benicia Wah and also the other sister who just finished, because and maybe one night on your program, Brother Lance, I can just maybe do a good review of my book, because I am the author of a book entitled Recapturing the African Mind. And this is mainly what you're talking about tonight and what the sister's talking about. And so I just, like I said, tonight I was just listening, but I would like to express from one of the pages in my book, in the chapter where I offer solutions to the problem that the sister was talking about. And I say that Black educators and masses of Black people must systematically reject the outdated, antiquated, obsolete, traditional,
yes,
Eurocentric academic approaches.
Yes.
And new frames of references must be developed that soar beyond the Euro-American concepts. An entirely new mind has to be placed in the heads of African and African-American people. Mm-hmm. As Frantz Fanon says in his book, The Wretched of the Earth, on page 253, let us not decide to imitate Europe. Mm-hmm. Let us combine our muscles and our brains in a new direction.
Yes.
Let us try to create the whole man or woman whom Europe has been incapable of bringing to triumphant birth. Leaving Fanon now and the French colonialism and moving to, as the brother mentioned earlier too, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, the father of Black History Month. He says, colonized by whites in America from Europe, he too gives direction to Black America or Blacks in Africa. He states, and I quote Dr. Woodson, the educational system which has developed both in Europe and America is an antiquated process which does not hit the mark even in the case of the needs of the white man himself. If the white man wants to hold on to it, let him do so. But the Negro, so far as he is able, should develop and carry out a program of his own. And Black people must be taught to appreciate things African. There's nothing wrong with seeing the beauty, as Sister Benicia says, in ourselves. Education has to be given in an African way if we're going to recapture our minds. We must, as Arthur Schomburg said in his writings, dig up our past. It must be recaptured, reconstructed, and disseminated to the world. The minds of our youth must be retrained. There is in the elementary, secondary, and college classes too much of what has happened in Europe.
Yes.
Lectures and assignments about dead white kings, queens, and musicians should be discontinued. This time could be better spent on the roots of European civilization, which factually is Africa. Reality, by and large, has been determined by a small group of white men who live in Europe and America. And I rest my case, but maybe one night we can do a review of my book and get a chance to discuss some other things that you all have been talking about tonight.
Well, dear brother, I thank you so much for your spirit and sharing your book. And we'll put that on the agenda. We certainly will.
I didn't want to talk too long because you got 5 minutes, and I want to let you close out your own show. But thank you very much. It's been a good program tonight.
We appreciate that. any closing words, Reverend Pam and Dr. Kumba, that you'd like to share before we go?
Yes, Chief, and to all our listeners and your co-hosts, I am really, really excited and grateful for the opportunity. It's been a wonderful 2 hours. I would like to leave our viewers with this. Our future is bright, and the best is yet to come. A good place to start will be to go to africasbrainbank.org. That's www.africasbrainbank.org. We are definitely looking for an IT person, a brother or sister who can work on that. But I would like for you to reach out and see where you fit in our history, in your family. So Africa's Brain Bank is a one-stop repository for all people of African descent. And everybody is welcome. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Dr. Kumba, anything?
Well, just to thank you and our sister co-host, co-hostess, for the opportunity to have this conversation. The comments from the few speakers, and including our sister, are very well taken. They are things that we contemplate and we think about all the time. It's hard to cover so much ground in a 2 hour. It's hard to, some of us do this for a living. But it would be, again, encouraging to contemplate future collaborations and future programs with this radio station to not only get our message, but engage the conversation. I know we need a robust conversation across all waves, all media outlets. We can even help beam some of this in Africa, the African wavelength that can receive this kind of message. You talk about how do we collaborate? How does Africa know what do we do? How do we decolonize the mind? At the beginning of this program, the incantations, the incantations that brought out our heroes, the appropriate African heroes and heroines. I don't know of anywhere in Africa where they do that in the program. But there's a youth bulge out there that would love to listen to this. So we would love to be able to work with you to seek avenues to have this broadcast on the continent, whatever the partners and the sub-media would be. You will find receptivity. You played the Patrice Lumumba Lumumba at the beginning. He's getting receptivity. So the avenues for us to work together, and I think we should see this as a beginning, at least in my mind, as a beginning of... possibilities. So thank you very much, and greetings to all the audience, and thank them for listening in, taking the time to listen to us. If there are any other questions, follow up.
Thank all of you for joining us tonight, and all that we've said and heard has been taken under advisement. And please share the fact that we're on all of our shows from this media group. Listen in, and next time bring some people with you, invite them on, and let's keep building, and we'll, through this collaboration and this format, we'll be able to solve some of the problems that we have and not talk about other folks and what they're doing, that type of thing. So I thank you again, all of you. Until
I want to say a Santa Sana before you go.
Please.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to teach them the very best you can. Just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now.